Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer.
Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
And today's podcast is titled Rethink the Dollar. And before we go to our guest from Rethinking the Dollar, I want to play two audios, which and this podcast stems from Monday when we had a caller that asked about that suggested that some of the powers, global powers that be, are moving towards having one global currency. All right. And he suggested that the original election of Trump interfered with that process. So I want to play two, before we bring on Rethinking the Dollar, I wanted to play two clips. One is, I guess, sort of a trending topic where you had people that stormed the Capitol yesterday, and then what's happening in, I guess you would call it, a developing country in South America.
The images are astonishing. Rioters on the Senate dais in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office, ransacking the hallowed halls of our government.
It's embarrassing.
Even replacing the stars and stripes with the Trump flag. It was an unprecedented culmination to a day that started with thousands of Trump supporters caravanning from all over the country to contest what they called a rigged election and to hear President Trump one more time.
We will stop the steal.
Apparently spurred on by strident rhetoric from the president and his supporters.
Let's have trial by combat.
The rally turned into a march at the president's urging.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Some of the protesters believing incorrectly the president was marching with them.
President Trump is actually leading the crowd.
Once at the Capitol, the crowd, which included members of groups Women for America First, the Silent Majority, the Proud Boys, as well as QAnon supporters, became unruly.
We think that this election was rigged, stolen, there was fraud.
Pushing past overmatched and outnumbered Capitol Hill police. Once inside, mayhem.
We breached the building!
Protesters became looters, turning the Capitol inside out. Sadly, four people died in the chaos, including 14-year Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt, who was shot and killed as rioters attempted to break into this locked corridor. Just the day before, Babbitt had tweeted in part, "Nothing will stop us. The storm is here, and it is descending upon D.C." Her family writing in a statement, quote, "Ashley was both loyal as well as extremely passionate about what she believed in. She loved this country and felt honored to have served in our armed forces."
There's a family that's going to grieve tonight because of what got out of hand.
Stunned lawmakers on both sides of the aisle mourned the loss of life and rebuked the unprecedented breach from secure bunkers inside the Capitol.
It's a disgrace for anyone to tolerate anybody to come in and try to shut down our government.
When this whole thing wrapped up, there were rioters who were waving to cameras and taking selfies like they had done something great. I didn't see many arrests. I think we said there were around 52 that happened overall. But do we expect a wave of arrests to come?
Some of that lack of arrest may be because police were simply undermanned here yesterday, but I've covered protests in D.C. for a long time, and I suspect there will be significant additional arrests. There is so much closed-circuit television footage from the Capitol, video footage from social media and from news organizations, and some of that social media bragging you talked about will make it very easy for the MPD here in Washington, D.C. to track down these folks if they have the wherewithal to do so.
All right. Garrett Hake there at the Capitol. Garrett, thank you.
Okay, so that's a trending topic. Can we use, or is that a barometer of things to come. And then let's go one more before we go to, I guess, on Rethinking the Dollar, which I got this off of his YouTube channel. What's happening down in Venezuela?
The world is changing and all governments are responding with more of the same destructive policies. It looks like Venezuela's government is planning to move to a fully digital economy as hyperinflation has made worthless Bolivar notes practically disappear. The people of Venezuela, in an effort to protect themselves, have adopted a dollarization policy that has expanded throughout the local financial system. The U.S. dollar has operated as an escape valve for Venezuela amid U.S. sanctions and collapsing oil revenues, President Nicolas Maduro said in a televised interview with Telesur on Friday. He said 18.6% of all commercial transactions are in dollars, while 77.3% are carried out in bolivars with debit cards. Only 3.4% are paid with Bolivar notes. They have a war against our physical currency. We are moving this year to a more profound digital economy, in expansion. I've set the goal of an economy that's 100% digital, Maduro said, adding that physical money will eventually disappear. It's the latest ambitious currency plan from Venezuela's president, with no guarantee of success. In 2017, with the Bolivar in freefall, Maduro vowed that the nation would create a cryptocurrency called the Petro, backed by reserves of oil, gas, gold, and diamonds. The Petro launched in 2018, the U.S. called it a scam. Venezuela's currency has lost 99% of its value during 3 years of hyperinflation, forcing the country to issue higher denomination notes that in turn become useless in record time. The largest note now in circulation, 50,000 bolivars, is worth about 4 cents. The government has delayed plans to issue a 100,000 bolivar bill, which currently would be worth less than 10 cents. After formerly subsidized fuel prices were increased in June, cash is now only used to ride public transportation, and the Caracas subway routinely stops charging passengers due to cash shortages. Since late 2019, local banks have slowly started to offer accounts and financial products in U.S. dollars, but those remain limited as there's no clearing system in place to allow for digital transactions in U.S. dollars. Some banks have had technical meetings with Venezuela's central bank in an attempt to solve the problem amid high skepticism and caution due to U.S. sanctions. But Maduro vowed to create payment formats allowing transactions using savings and checking accounts in U.S. dollars. Despite promising to expand the use of the U.S. dollar in the economy, Maduro said a formal dollarization wouldn't happen. Venezuela has its currency and we are going to defend it, he said. So as a result of extreme hyperinflation that has plagued the country for almost a decade, the best thing to do now is to take them solely digital to further ruin the nation. There's a lot we can learn from this example of corrupt government and monetary enslavement. 1. Never trust your government to operate in your best interest. 2. Never have your entire life savings and financial future dependent upon a national currency. The best thing you can do is to make matters into your own hands and acquire undervalued assets that serve as insurance from the wealth destruction policies all government follow. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this update. Share your thoughts below and click the thumbs up button so more people can come across this type of information.
Okay, today's podcast is, well, titled Rethink the Dollar. I guess it's from Rethinking the Dollar, and that last audio, you can go to his YouTube channel titled Rethinking the Dollar. This, something just popped up in my head. Like I said, this podcast was germinated on Monday. Globally, are we headed towards one currency? That's the question. And the second question I just popped in my head as I was listening to this audio is, should governments completely get out of the currency game? Just stop. I mean, because man did operate for centuries upon centuries without any type of currency issued by any government. In any event, let's go to our special guest for today, Rethinking the Dollar. Good morning.
LA, how you doing, my friend?
Fine, fine. Happy New Year.
Same to you, boss man. I appreciate you for having me on the show, and definitely, you know, interesting times, and you know, the dollar and rethinking the dollar, all that is well underway. So, looking forward to connecting with you today.
Yeah, well, let's start off with we had a guest call in Monday. What he suggested was, or put out there was, that with the election of Donald Trump, it sort of derailed in people that, or he didn't name the people specifically, but I mean, I'm paraphrasing, that they were, some people were gearing to trying to engineer one global currency. Let's call it a global. Okay.
Right.
Spendable on every country on the planet. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I contacted you. But then my question is, do we really need any government-issued currencies at all?
Great, great question. And so, you know, once my personal opinion on the matter is, you know, of course we do not need a centrally controlled currency issued from a government. But given the way society has developed, being led and driven by those that control the governing bodies of our nations, that's a part of the agenda. So, yes, we can do without, but no, I don't anticipate we will, just because the system is not set up for mankind to do without some form of so-called leadership in what we call government. So it would be great if we could have that, but I wouldn't hold my breath waiting on it. So
I agree with you. Yeah. And a lot of people don't have the skill sets to, you know, build their own homes, grow their own food, catch their own food, get fetch their own water, or trade among trade amongst each other, or even resolve their own disputes.
Right. Very true. Right. We become very dependent upon governments these days. And so most people don't realize even the origins of how, you know, our republic, referring to those in the United States, how it actually began and how it has transitioned from a, you know, for the people into a position to where it's for the government. And it's one of the things of, you know, what can the government get from us, as opposed to what can we expect our government to do on our behalf in a more favorable way. So we've gotten a long way from how this country initially started, unfortunately. So we don't know how to take care of ourselves, unfortunately.
Well, you're very accurate with that statement. Now, on the audio I played with Venezuela, is that what type of barometer, if any at all, would you say is happening down there?
Well, I've been covering the Venezuela situation for years now. Ever since, you know, I started the rethinking dollar process, it was inspired by my trip to Venezuela years ago, and having watched the country deteriorate over the last decade because of, you know, government intervention, government interference, corruption, you name it, and to see them go through different variations of a currency, especially within this last 6 or 7 years, they've just basically rebranded the same Bolivar currency by calling it the Forte Bolivar, which means strong, and then they got the Nuevo Bolivar, which means new, and now they got the so-called digital version, which never really got a chance, you know, get off the ground, with the Petro, which is that digital version, solely digital version. And so they've been trying to, you know, solve their problem, but the problem is the current monetary structure in general, because it's centralized, because it's, you know, top down as opposed to bottom up. It's going to always fail. And so right now we're witnessing, you know, based upon the information you just shared from my channel, is that I guess starting this year, the goal is to remove paper out of circulation because they've exhausted all their options as far as actually being able to continue to pump out banknotes, because no one is actually able to utilize those things, and they keep adding zeros. And as they issue a new currency, they try to drop some zeros to try to cover up the hyperinflation they're experiencing. But it doesn't work. So it's all a failed experiment.
Very interesting
that
you've been there. You've been there. I got that on my short list of places to visit. But since you've been there, is it true in some cases, it could be isolated cases, where people are at the gas pump and still paying with the government-issued currency, they might be paying with loaves of bread or what have you?
Well, when I went there, you know, it was under Hugo Chavez when he was still alive. So this was, you know, well over 10 years ago. And so since that time frame, I've seen more than enough videos and little documentaries out of the country where people are actually basically paying with cigarettes or paying with whatever they have, which actually shows how valuable tangible items can be in times of paper fiat currency crises like they're experiencing there. And so when the government-owned petrol stations are willing to accept, you know, cigarettes or, you know, lent out your pockets in some cases possibly, that lets you know how worthless the currency is. And then the next question will be, does those items actually make it up to the top as far as the government? And then my response would probably be no. So it's probably used to just pay the employees and those that actually work at that particular service station, because the government, unfortunately, has subsidized the gas for there for years, because they, you know, they have so much of it apparently, but they're having, you know, infrastructure problems and being able to, you know, pump out good crude oil. But so once again, when you have items that can be used as a medium of exchange, that right there is an example of how, you know, do you actually need, you know, digital or paper notes to get you to your daily needs or whatnot, as far as gas and whatever else you need. So, but that's just stuff I've seen more recently. But back in the day when I was there, I remember actually, you know, in a bus going to the gas station, and I got out of the bus, went in, got some stuff out of the store. And one thing that caught my attention was looking up on the billboard to see the prices. I looked at the billboard, and I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, at that time, it said something like 10 cents or 10, you know, centavos, which I believe are, you know, the conversion of bolivars or something like that. And I did a double take because I looked up there and I'm thinking, like, you know, I thought it was an error. But then again, come to find out, the price of a gallon or a liter probably was that 9 cents or 10 cents. And then I'm thinking, like, man, I could fill up my gas tank off like for 50 cents, 60 cents. I'm like, man, this is, you can't beat this.
Right.
And so I'm like, man, I wouldn't mind having this back in Michigan.
Well, now, all right, like, you know, because I'm on my phone right now looking at the currency conversion. They got a VEF, which is a
VEF, VES, you know, so it's Venezuela Forte. So I think the current measurement of a unit of account there is a VEF, which is the Venezuelan the Forte, which is their, well, I think one of their more recent rebrands of a strong bolivar. So Forte meaning strong. And so that was initially something that I think Maduro ended up rebranding the currency, dropping some zeros, and then issued a new note. And I want to say the denominations, I think it's a maybe 10,000, 50,000, and, you know, it's three zeros at the end of that particular currency now, I believe. And they've tried to rebrand it just recently. But on another note, when I was in Venezuela a decade plus ago, they had your ordinary denominations of, you know, 5, 10, 20, 50. And the biggest note at that time, I think, was 100. And so I actually, of course, you know, for my travels, keep those notes, and I go back as a historical marker of saying this is what was and look at what's now. So I got some of those currencies with the zeros on them too. So, but
all right, well, this is interesting because, I checked with the VA, the one that ends with F. For every one American dollar, it's 9.9 of their currency in that particular denomination.
Okay.
Now, my question is, because you've got quite a few people from the United, well, I'm going to just pick the United States, it's from many other countries too, but that they travel to Brazil, Colombia, Thailand, all over Africa, you know, different countries in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one, they're looking at the cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as far as – and business opportunities. So let's just deal with this. Keep it simple, the cost of living. When you were there in Venezuela, I imagine your American dollars went a long way.
It did. It did. And I was actually only there for, I think, five or six days or whatever. And so with that experience there, thankfully, I didn't have a chance to spend much. So I went to the mall or whatnot and did the typical tourism type of things. And, you know, just I didn't actually do much shopping or whatnot, so I didn't do much spending. But overall, my trip there was extremely cheap. So I'd imagine nowadays, you know, you don't have those luxuries to be able to do much of the stuff I did back then because of how dangerous things might be even more so today. But the cost of living definitely in Central America, or, you know, any parts of Northern South America is relatively cheap. So
now, would that be a way to rethink the dollar? In other words, you earn your money in dollars or euros or something like that, but you spend it in another currency. In other words, you're out of Michigan, so United States based. Mm-hmm. So you're earning your money in dollars, but you mm-hmm. might live in a country where your currency multiplies.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned this before in the show last time I was here about how more Americans, due to the need to find more sustainable, affordable living, you know, transitioning further down south, you know, around the equator area, where, like I mentioned, Central America and Northern South America area is one of that region where it's just extremely cheaper to live and to function due to the economy there are. A little bit worse off, if I can say it that way, than the North, mm-hmm. as far as them not being too stable in their own local currency there, to where the dollar goes a lot further, and so it packs more of a punch in that region than it does in the North. So definitely, and I do follow a lot of content creators that live in regions such as like Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and Panama especially seems to be a big area for retirees and whatnot. So. Yeah, people are realizing that the American dream concept of, you know, being able to live in your own country and live comfortably through your retirement years is not something that's probably the smartest to do these days, because you don't get much for your buck. So I think that's a growing movement.
Now, imagine lifestyle has a lot to do with it, and then, of course, location. I mean, if you live in New York mm-hmm. City, that's more expensive to live there, whereas if you go to yeah. some place in New York State, in a rural area, it's financially more sustainable, but however, right. people might not want to live there.
Right, very true.
Your comment, now, what's happening in D.C. Mm-hmm. yesterday,
yeah,
which is, you know, it's about, well, by this time next week, it'll be a last week story. Should we look at that as a possible barometer, not so much that one event, but because I haven't checked what currencies have done overnight, but
mm-hmm.
could that have any effect as from other countries looking in on the mm-hmm. USA?
Oh, definitely. 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 I think the world is recognizing how dysfunctional of a government structure we currently have. And so I think a lot of people, especially China and all of our so-called creditors, you know, they've already established the precedence before that they're going to start moving away from the dollar as their reserve asset because of, you know, what's happened over the last 9 months, especially with the federal government deciding to borrow, as well as, you know, Federal Reserve itself deciding to accommodate the banking and credit markets to the tune of, what, about $4 trillion within 9 months. So that, mm-hmm. to me, shows an abuse of the position of having the world reserve currency, to where anybody in their right mind would know that, you know, all those funds that are owed from decades past will not be paid upon. So they're going to be debasing a lot more. So you probably wouldn't want to hold too many Federal Reserve notes or treasuries in your reserves as a savings vehicle these days. So, and that's the thing, is like right now, outside of like, you know, certain mainstream news sources, you may not be able to actually gather that type of information. And so unless you actually are familiar with how the bond market works and how all those financial assets and, you know, financial vehicles function, you might not necessarily see it on the charts right away, but it's been an ongoing trend for years now, so it doesn't surprise me at all that, you know, this new digital transformation that we're heading into is factored into that as well. Just look at, you know, the price of a single Bitcoin right now. It's $38,000, I think. So that's a leading indicator as to people's confidence in what we call the dollar these days. So, you know, if you measure, you know, the increase in nominal value of a Bitcoin in relation to how many units of a so-called dollar it costs to purchase one, now it's one 38,000th of a dollar is needed to acquire one Bitcoin, whereas in 10, 11 years ago, it was, you know, the dollar was very favorable in comparison to a Bitcoin because it was under, 50 cents at that time. So that right there to me is a leading indicator of what, I think we're intentionally being steered into as a vehicle away from the Federal Reserve note system. So, yeah, it's the transformation is well underway. So it's no hiding it anymore.
Okay, let's take a caller here. 314, your mic is open.
Well, it's a lot of things going on. I think what you seen yesterday, and I was listening to the news article, the reporting how they mislead on how they report and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that came there to D.C. in defense of the United States Constitution weren't there to do no protesting, well, no rioting as they was described. There was some infiltrators that done that rioting.
Yeah.
The lady, the Air Force vet, was shot by a person in plain clothes. And it wasn't the D.C. police, I don't think, because he was white. And most of the D.C. police is black. So, and also at the end, those are there for Trump. They was cleaning up the place. But the thing is that was staged. The Republicans are a bunch of part of the swamp. When they came back, they should have went on and done what they was doing to send those ballots back to those six states for the legislature to take it up. That's what it was all about.
Right.
And people just don't understand. What's your name, sir?
It's Michael.
People just don't understand it, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And actually, not to cut you off, I spoke about that last night on my talk show about how, it was all a setup. Everything we witnessed was designed for that particular moment in time to actually push through the electoral certification process. And so, as you saw, when they came back in the session that evening, every politician referred to the events that happened earlier, and out of so-called fear of not wanting to see more of that, they was like, well, I was going to contest it, but now I'm not going to, for the sake of our country, this and that, I'm not going to, and so let's just move things forward. So that was a great move by those would be probably considered the deep state of trying to dismantle any type of disagreement on those particular swing states to push that thing through, which it obviously worked. So, yeah, it was all a big psyop.
And not to get off the currency, if I could just for a second, and I've been following this so long, what's needed is a separate ballot for federal candidates, whereas the people that's going to vote on that ballot is properly vetted, similar to that passport you got in your pocket, and is handled by professional people, no connection to the internet through machines, and whatever the states want to do, because federal government can't tell the states what to do, but the Constitution allows the federal government, that is Congress, to make rule changes, and that's what I think is needed in order to make sure that you got at least federal elections where you don't have these problems what we've witnessed.
Right. Yeah, the problem is I don't think, Congress ultimately wants they don't want transparency and they don't want true elections because that'll disrupt their agendas and the, special interests and lobbyist groups. If people actually were exposed for their votes and the things behind them voting that way, I don't think they want truth to be told because that would disrupt the military-industrial complex. Now we got the big pharma-industrial complex and big tech complex. So we got all these complexes that own our government. So, yeah, I don't see them wanting to actually do away with any type of things that would expose them. So,
and another thing too, all this is going on because of the ignorance in people.
Yeah.
Because in those six contested states, it was the people. It's the people who's supposed to go to the legislature and say, look, you need to straighten this out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I come to courts didn't hear it. Courts can't decide on a perfect court. Someone say, that's the legislature's responsibility. And actually, it's those state legislatures through electors that elect the president. People just go through the motion, emotion of voting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. On the thing about the currency, that's going to be a hard nut to chew. I'm kind of sort of against a one world currency. I'm going to tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the dollar is strong, especially when you're trying to do things in other countries, especially mm-hmm. African countries. In Ghana, the, you know, 5 CDs for $1, it's a round number. But people in Ghana, I got a wife. My wife is from Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
For very few dollars, they live well. They got food,
yeah.
Place to stay. And you would be surprised. I think the average wage, minimum wage in Ghana is like $1,200 US a year.
Mm.
And if you was going there to do an investment, like their treasury bills pay about 15%. I've seen it as high as 40% interest a year. So if you had $100,000 and you interest of $15,000 a year, you living like Donald Trump in one of those countries.
Yeah.
You know, if you understand what I'm saying. So especially with blacks, if blacks was capable, and I'm not saying, that's the true thing. If you ain't doing it here, you ain't going to do it no place else. So if they was capable of what they were doing something here, they could take their dollars over there. And, man, could you imagine the things that you could build?
Yeah.
The way the dollar spreads.
You have a lot more opportunity. But yet also, you know, I think, you know, this upcoming decade as a part of this whole transition towards that, you know, that build back better, you know, global concept of trying to reunite all governments under one single body and into that, you know, one world currency, which is inevitable. You know, it's biblical in nature. You know, just Revelation 13:17 mentions you won't be able to buy or sell without that mark. So I refer to that mark towards whatever currency will be required to use, you know, globally. So at that point, when we get to there, you won't be able to have much of an option as to what you use for currency. And certain countries like that, which are right now probably labeled as, you know, developing countries, you know, I think, you know, there's going to be a heavy influence of the Chinese presence in those countries already now, but even more so further in this decade, where I think they're going to, you know, politically and economically, you know, probably try to dictate and control more of the quality of life for foreigners coming there, trying to, you know, I guess live better and live good, because I don't think that's a part of their agenda in the long run. So, right now, man, the traveling aspect is also interesting.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Me, you know, not having any reflection on you, I'm against the United States dollar losing its hegemony in the world, because I think that's very important that we stay number one. Heck, we're so accustomed to that. What we have built here, you know, as far as, of course, things changing, but, you know, we're just not getting our young black kids into those professions educational-wise where they can demand, you know, high wages and high salaries and what goes along with that.
Very true.
China is the enemy of the United States.
Yeah.
And if you look at the military, you think you were looking at our ships, jets, and other military equipment. So they have done what they've done by copying rather than going through the process of starting off with a Model A Ford and working your way up to a Bentley, if you want to put it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, but that's, you know, that's a part of the global agenda. So, you know, I've been talking heavily about, you know, the what has been put out there as of March and April with the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum's pre-planned, you know, idea of what a model world would look like, where people don't own anything and they're also going to be happy with that, according to what they're trying to put out there as a part of their campaign for a better society, a more equal, you know, playing field for the world and all that, you know, the selling points.
is, you know, part of the evil in and of itself. So that's, you know, if they succeed in that, 10 years from now, we won't even recognize this country, nevertheless, you know, any other country that has enjoyed the privileges of living off the backs of, you know, the Chinese in particular, because everything is made in China. So I think that's going to be a shift that we're going to have to adjust with sooner than not. So, but yeah, I'm not.
Well,
I'm not
tell you what,
dollars.
They yeah. denigrated Donald Trump very well with the media, for one thing.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
goodness.
What the people
yeah.
get their information off of. His idea of making America first was very good. Look at the economy that spurned up off of that. One of the reasons we're paying $1.85 for gasoline now is because of those regulations that he removed off of the,
yeah.
you know, Shell production.
Yeah.
Hey, I got grandkids that's in the gas and oil business. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I think beyond the political front, but regardless of whether it was a Trump administration moving forward or a Biden administration moving forward, you know, Uncle Sam's beyond tapped out. And so the deficits that we've been, you know, running in over the last several years have only gotten bigger. So, you know, at some point, you won't be able to continue to, I guess, quote unquote, borrow without a day of reckoning of having to, you know, pay back or to address even just the mere interest on the loans we're taking out around, you know, for around the world. So, you know, the dollar supremacy is ultimately going to be, you know, come to an end just as a normal process of transition, which is going to make life here in the U.S. a lot more complicated, because we've been able to be blessed for the last 50 years to enjoy this position of having the reserve currency, but we've abused it. And that's a part of, you know, a debt-based system, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's no way around what's currently underway and what's coming, regardless of who's in office, I think.
Well, we're going to have to see what we're going to have to do. And, you know, I from St. Louis, and there's a difference between the people, well, maybe the politicians, not. But them Democrats in them cities that I recognize, those cities are terrible. They just cannot manage.
Mm-hmm.
And then, too, you got the problem with the education, especially with African in the inner cities. Those schools are terrible. It's not the children, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the children. It's the leadership, the parents, and the families that's letting those children suffer like that. Then you have to bring in these foreigners to do things that American children can't do. I looked at Nigeria. I think I said this the other day to L.A., Nigerian immigrants here, which is about 300,000, 350,000, they sent $6.2 billion back to Nigeria in remittances.
Hmm.
And I think the Haitians is somewhere along there, too. Now, if you complain about the dollar not staying in your community and bounce like the Jews and everybody else, well, these immigrants are taking dollars out of your community also. They're not recirculating.
Yeah. All right. Wow. Yeah, and on top of that, there's more actual, you know, physical units of currency outside this country, you know, as savings vehicles for every nation that has gone through currency issues over the last several decades. So, you know, I have some, you know, buddies down in Argentina, and to them, you know, a Federal Reserve note is the equivalent of what we would consider gold as far as being a hedge or a safety net. To them, the Federal Reserve note is. So there's walls, and people have, you know, buried dollars and grounds, and so savings. And so there's a lot more units of dollars outside this country that people value as, you know, our version of what we consider gold or silver to be, to where, you know, those units out there, eventually, at some point, they're going to realize that, you know, we're abusing our privilege here, and they're going to start trying to spend those things. And so they're going to come back home, all right, unfortunately. So just in reference to, you know, the dollars leaving, they're going to come back all right.
Well, you know the thing with this, with the digital currency, and I've been trying to get on Coinbase all morning long to pick up a few more Bitcoins. But I think that's going to be abused, too. I think it's they're going to have – well, I guess they won't have control. Well, you have to convert it from something. What is going to be the base currency? I mean, even in Forex, you got a base currency. The euro trading against the dollar is about a 1.34. That means you got to have $1.34 in order to buy 1 euro. So what's going to be the base currency?
Well, my personal opinion is that, you know, with this digital transition that, you know, is being put in front of us, and so even going back, you know, to this being a part of a greater plan, of course, I think the best way to condition people to accept the concept of utilizing their phone primarily as a way of doing banking as well as doing their traditional financial, you know matters on their phone is one concept. And I think Bitcoin definitely helps because you don't have to have all the, you know, computer infrastructure or actually call a broker anymore. You can just, as you mentioned, log on to Coinbase and, you know, do it for yourself. And so as a part of this, you know, this re-education they're putting us through towards that central bank digital currency model, which is, you know, of course, in the works and it's coming. I think with Bitcoin in particular, if this is truly a technology designed by the people for the people, it'll end up being a standard in and of itself to where those that value Bitcoin as a medium of exchange or a store of value, they'll price items in Bitcoins or, you know, stats, as some people say, like how many stats, how many Satoshis does it take to get this? So the same way we price everything in a dollar, you know, with a dollar for this, dollar for that, they'll say, you know, it's 0.001, you know, Satoshis or you know, so they'll use Bitcoin itself if that ends up being the standard for the people or even governments possibly one day. Everything will be priced in Bitcoins more than likely.
Well, you know, here's the thing on that too. These coins are so volatile.
Mm-hmm.
If I bought a loaf of bread last month, well, now that this currency have jumped up, say from $5,000 to $38,000, that's going to be difficult to do. And another thing, right now, it's an investment rather than a trading medium. People don't use it to trade.
Right.
Now, being that, you still going to have what people call is a disparity in wealth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because I bought Bitcoin way back when.
Yeah.
And a lot of people bought them way back when. You know,
if you
get something just like Tron is 0.0223. It's less than, it's less than less than 3 cents. Now, if that coin go up to $38, hey, the people that came in like that is going to be super wealthy.
Yeah. But,
and the little person is going to always be coming in on the tail end.
Right.
So he's trying to buy Bitcoin at $38 a coin, he's going to be getting about a grain of salt.
And a grain of salt, when it's time to use it for something you need, and if there's somebody on the other side willing to accept that, that could be a wealth preservation vehicle for you. But I think the ultimate issue we're going to face is that what we're witnessing now in this digital transformation is that all central banks, all governments are destroying their national currency. So we not only in the U.S. here are people dumping dollars to get into Bitcoin. They're doing it in the euro. They're doing it in pesos and you name it. Everybody recognized, A, the trend, as well as not wanting to miss out. So those that, as you mentioned, those that got in early will benefit. But the question will then be, at what point do you get out? Because it can't go up forever without there being a way of putting those Bitcoins to use. And so I think that's where we're going to have some issues because, once again, that your average person who don't have many or much of anything already won't be able to expect much down the line because they're still going to be on the short end of the stick. So that wealth disparity, as you mentioned, will be there. But then again, majority of the Bitcoins right now are already in the hands of the extremely wealthy.
And yeah, so, they're mining them.
Yeah, they mined them. And because I've always been a skeptic because, you know, none of this is by coincidence. This is all a part of the transition to the digital world that I mentioned. And so I think that the Bitcoin protocol itself is all good now, but at some point when the central banks are ready to say enough's enough, you know, we've got them all now conditioned to look at their phones and they know that the digital currencies is where we're heading. Now we can expose the true nature of this whole, you know, alleged decentralized technology. And I think at some point there's going to be something that really rattles people's confidence in, you know, the decentralized nature, which will probably have to start with Bitcoin. So because the governments can't afford to lose control of everything.
and it'll make it
hard.
Well,
I think they have lost control. You know, the biggest holder of biggest mining operation is in Russia and in Siberia, especially during the time when the corn was low, because the need for cheap electricity and also the ability to keep those machines cool. In
right.
Russia,
oh,
they've
oh,
got
no, don't forget China. Don't forget China.
Yeah, yeah,
I think,
China. I was
going to
say them too.
Half of the hash rate is in China. So the Chinese control. Oh, I think I saw something about 65% of the overall mining hash rate power. And so with them rolling out their digital yuan, it's good to say that, you know, I'm reading reports now about how all the nations that do business with China, they're going to be steered towards settling payments in the digital yuan. And so once the digital yuan concept spreads, as far as it being a remittance for payments, at that point, they've established a footing for the transition of the reserve currency, more than likely, into their possession with their digital version of a reserve or whatever for them doing business with them. And then at what point will they say, okay, Bitcoin is no longer something that we want to thrive, because we want the world to now utilize the digital yuan solely and not have an escape route from us being able to control, see, track everything that happens on our particular blockchain. And so I can see, you know, a couple of years from now, they decide to, you know, make some type of legislation in their country that all those miners got to shut down. It's illegal, da da da, and that will definitely affect the network. Now it won't destroy Bitcoin, but it's going to shake out a lot of weak hands that got in for the wrong reasons, which could definitely cause some more price fluctuations. And so, yeah, I don't think Bitcoin is going to be something that we can trust for, you know, for 20, 30 years into the future.
It's going to be a problem. Because if they acquire them with the, you can still say a thing. If they acquire them with the dollar, even if you're mining, you still acquiring them with the dollar because of the energy that you have to expend in order to produce them. So what are they going to trade them for in the future if there's no dollars?
Yeah, actual tangible items. And skill and labor.
Yeah, but I only need so many blenders and so many in the house, man. Come on.
Think about what at this current rate right now. Think about what you can probably how better off you'll be if you were a heavy Bitcoin holder living in Ghana. You know what I'm saying? For example, and then transferring it into the Guyanese currency, or keep it, or going to dollar, or going to whatever else. You know, you could probably, you know, buy you some nice things down in Ghana, I'd imagine. So,
well, you could do a whole lot of things.
You could have too much of that down there, huh?
Yeah. See, but then you got another problem, that in order to develop those countries, being that they don't manufacture and produce all the things that they need, let's take something simple like electricity. Ghana doesn't produce any turbines that can power a power electrical generating station. So they got to go outside the country and get that from the West.
Yeah.
And not only that, but other things too. So, I mean, it's going to be a heck of a... Well, I tell you what's going to happen. It's probably going to be a war between the United States and China.
That's
a hell of a horrible thought.
That's always on the table. Yeah, because think about this. Like, everything we've been talking about is a transition, and I've never seen a government willingly just give up and say, okay, your turn. You know, you go ahead and have the reserve status. We'll sit back now. And no, because it'll disrupt everything built on this side of the world. So, you know, the best front is to pretend like you're fighting for retaining the things that have made America great and all that good stuff like that. So I can see that being in the cards in the future. And also the Biden administration tries to play that, you know, China's not our friend. China always need an enemy. So I wouldn't be surprised that comes about next couple of months and years. If Biden tries to get off to a head start with showing how much of a strong leader he can be and all that stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, China has bought off a lot of these leaders because that's what they. If there's a, for instance, if there's a war. And these factions need weapons. Well, the State Department, Hillary Clinton, they let the transactions. Then these factions donate to these foundations that they control. So that's how they're getting paid. The same thing is in this last stimulus bill. Look at the money that's going to these countries. even in Ukraine, $900 million. Well, that's going to come back around into somebody's campaign coffers.
Right. Right. So they're basically paying for, they're prepaying for special interest in advance.
That's it.
Yeah. And so I know that once that, you know, I think the $600 was given out, and of course the Trump was saying,
and that was lending, right? That wasn't give out. That's against your future tax return.
Now, and one thing, I you know, this is where I got to, you know, probably reinvestigate it, but I want to say that the stimulus funds that have been given out will not be considered as income that's taxable. If I read it correctly a while back on that first $1,200,
you're right.
I could be wrong,
it's only for taxpayers. If you got $2,000 back in your taxes last year, they're anticipating that you similar this year, and you're just going to get $800.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, yeah, that makes sense then.
That's because what they're doing, they forward you your tax return early. But they don't get $1,200. Now they're coming back with another two. Average person don't get no $3,200 back in taxes. Now, what's going to happen? If they can't pay that when it's due, they're going to have to pay interest. They're going to have to pay penalty and interest on the penalty for at least that year. Well, you're talking about having to cough out about probably another $500 or $600 or $700.
Yeah.
People
and,
slick,
and,
ain't
they? Yeah. Don't forget that I think, you know, Biden referenced that, you know, the first thing he's going to try to get done when he gets in there is getting people 2,000. So if he lives up to that promise, there'll be another round coming within the next, you know, 60 days, 90 mm-hmm. days. Now, especially, it looks like the Senate and the House are, you know, under his control for the most part. So they're about to flood the economy with as much accommodations as possible. And
well, you know, you hope that some of them Democrats come to some senses and do the right thing, because it's going to be a mess and people going to get hurt. People think that what they're doing because of these promises paying for student loans and some of the other promises that have been made. Those promises, I ain't never known a government to do something like that. You don't, just like this stimulus program, this stimulus is not a grant. This is just them foraging you what you your anticipation of a tax return early. You still got to pay that money back.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be a rude awakening for a lot of people, but you know, as you see, we're being groomed and prepared for the concept of universal basic income. And so along with this digital transformation, they're going to lump in a monthly allowance, as I call it, and then they're going to incentivize it through your phone with the downloading of some new app, whether it be from the Treasury, the Fed, or whatever. And, you know, if you cooperate with what they
and
want
to do,
and if
you ain't got your COVID
shots,
you don't get nothing.
Exactly. So that's what we're being set up for. And it's unfortunate the majority of people can't see it that way, to say, hell no, you know, keep your funds. I want my freedom. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want, you know, a bigger government and all the stuff that comes with that. So, yeah, I've been teaching this type of stuff for a long time, man.
Yeah, well, I'm going to let you guys get back to talking, but I appreciate your information. You sound like you're very knowledgeable.
I try to keep my eyes on the floor. I try to keep my eyes open, the ears attentive to what's going on, so I can, you know, try to, you know, prepare and warn as many people as I can.
You try to warn others, but
you
surely gonna prepare yourself.
Exactly. That's all I can do, man.
Yeah. Okay, Ellie. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Bianca, for that participation. Michael, give us now for people that want to keep on top of rethinking the dollar, your social media could give out that information.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. So I have a daily talk show where I'm adjusting the times, but it's usually in the you know in the evening around 7:30-ish Eastern Standard Time, where we just talk. I same format as you. I have people call in and share what excites them, share what frustrates them about the politics and the economy. So that's it. You know, rethinking the dollar on YouTube. And then also from an educational standpoint, you know, just rethinkingthedollar.com
I have a website with articles and, you know, all the things about the economy, metals, you know, the crypto space is all there. So it's a, you know, wealth of knowledge in and of itself. So just rethinking the dollar, type it in Google, you know, you'll see everything that I put out there over the last couple of years. So it's been a long journey.
Now, you got, what, this Thursday, so you got a show, well, you like to say a daily show. So you know what the topic is for tonight?
I do not. So usually what I do is I, you know, keep my phone, you know, always active. And then also the community members, you know, forward me articles or whatnot. We usually talk about whatever's the hottest subjects with the economy or the political sphere each day. So by the time we get to our show, you know, we have five or six different topics to touch on. And of course, everybody has a strong opinion about something. So they call in and share it and, you know, educate each other, encourage one another. So it subject matters is usually day by day.
Okay, well, that's the way to go, kid. That's trending.
Yeah.
And whatnot, because I've got it. I'm one of your subscribers here on YouTube, so.
I appreciate you, man. Feel free to call in sometime.
Michael,
I love
thanks
you. Love
a
you.
Lot.
You're
We're going to wrap it up early today, because I got to go shopping for a chihuahua.
A chihuahua? Okay.
I already got one, but she needs a whole bunch of stuff, Sam. Anyway, on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day. Tomorrow now we're going to get into what's tomorrow's topic? African Americans in Africa, which
sounds like a good conversation.
Cultural difference.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
All right, LA, thanks for having me.